Hello and welcome to our last NL Full Time of the regular season. I'm Rob Worrell. We've got so much to pack in today that we're actually going to record it in three parts, and then our wonderful producer Luke Edwards is going to stitch it all back together seamlessly, and you, our listeners, will not have a clue. There were three different meetings. Joining me to review a chaotic final day in the National League is our regular pundit, Off the Line Blogs, Joe Pope.
Yeah, hi Rob. Thanks for having me again.
Also joining us and not looking a day older than when I last saw him. Well, it was only a week ago anyway. It's TNT Sports National League lead, Aaron McLean. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, guys. Good morning.
And if you think Aaron already looks, you know, a picture of health and athleticism, he's going to go and watch the London Marathon today, so you'll be even fitter and healthier after that.
I don't know if I'll be any fitter and healthier. I'm only watching it, so I don't think I could run it, that's for sure.
I know. Massive respect, by the way, to the chap who has just run the length of Africa, who's going to be there today. And the hardest geezer. Can't think of his actual name. Who knows it?
I don't. What an incredible thing to do, though. Wow.
It is incredible. We've been following the journey all the way, and I'm embarrassed to say that. I can't think of his name right now, but I know he's the hardest geezer. Anyway, given that relegation is far more definitive than playoffs, let's start by looking at the bottom end. Who was the one team that would join Oxford City, Dorking and Kidderminster on Saturday to plummet down from the National League? There were five teams, in fairness, involved, still looking over their shoulder, or in Bournemouth's case, looking upwards, desperate to keep their NL, their National League status. Edit there, required loop, please. All five had their destiny in their own hands. And that's something that I can't remember happening before. Can you, Aaron?
Not that I can remember where every team, providing that they did their job, would stay up. It was, yeah, it's incredible. It's been an incredible season overall, to be honest. Apart from the actual title race, I think there was only two games yesterday that didn't have anything riding on it at one end or another. So it was, yeah, insane.
And that's part testimony to the way the season unravelled, and partly, I think, due to the playoff format that shocked us all when it came in. But I love it now, and I love the way it rewards the staggered you know, stages of where teams finish. But getting back to that battle at the bottom then, in fairness to Woking and to Wealdstone, fantastic days for both of them. They had their destiny in their own hands. They had their sights on the finishing line, and Woking in particular did it without any fuss at all. There was a double there for Tunji Akinola, and from relatively early on in the day, it looked as if they would be safe. They may or may not have needed to get all 3 points, but they got them anyway. And Wealdstone were involved in a bit of a topsy-turvy game at Oldham, who ended the season the way they've played it, really. They flattered to deceive. They've got a great amount of talent at their disposal, but they haven't really. The sum of their parts hasn't been quite what Oldham fans would have expected. But congratulations to Wealdstone. Mason Barrett getting the winning goal there after Oldham had pulled level. And York City, well, that's another season of massive underachievement, chaps, isn't it? Just dealing with these three teams briefly. They lost to Solihull Moors. No shame, of course, in that. Solihull Moors well placed for the playoffs. But in the end, York City stayed up by just a point, because we're going to home in on the other game in just a minute. But any comments, chaps, on Woking, Wealdstone and York? Joe, do you want to go first with one of them?
Yeah, I suppose I've been quite impressed with the job that both Michael Doyle and Sam Cox have done at Woking and Wealdstone. I did have concerns when Michael Doyle came in, but he's steadily built his system, bought in some really good players, used the market really, really well, and they've got better and better as the season's gone on. And as for Wealdstone, yeah, you know, Sam Cox done really, really well. Pleased for him, because he's an ex-Torquay boy. Yeah, he's come in and he's perhaps provided that more notable fight. Sam Cox is more energetic, more charismatic, and the team's responded to that, and they've had some big wins along the way. And yeah, really good to see them in the National League again, because Wealdstone, I like little clubs like Wealdstone. I like going there and the league again next year.
Aaron, coming to you. Feel free to add in about Woking and Wealdstone. We do have to, and it's a tough call, I know, but we do have to reflect on a season of underachievement at York City. You had all the resources that a club at this level could have wanted to sustain a challenge at the other end of the table.
Absolutely. It's huge disappointment. I think before the season, before we'd kicked a ball in the National League, they were one of the favourites to get promotion. The finances that they obviously have, they have one of the biggest budgets in the division. So to finish 1 point above the drop zone come the final day is huge disappointment. There will be a lot of questions asked. I think there'll be a lot of fingers pointed in all different directions, because as much as you can point the finger at the players, you can point the finger at the various managers, you kind of have to point the finger in the way that the money's been spent as well, and the recruitment side of it. I just don't think that I think there's so many things that have gone wrong that they kind of need to go back to the drawing board, actually really get a plan that's sustainable, get a manager in place that they believe in and they're gonna stick with and trust that they know what they're doing. And yeah, it's I think they almost approach next season as a newly promoted team, because this season really has just been so chaotic that there's been absolutely no rhythm, no consistency, and yeah, it's not sustainable. Just throwing money isn't sustainable, and it's been proven by their finishing position.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things they're going to have to do, unfortunately, at York is throw some more money, because you can't go again with the same squad. An awful lot of those players have been bought on more than 1 year contracts. But a lot of work still to do for Adam Hinchelwood and for Matt Ogler, the owner. Hinchelwood can at least say he's come in, steady the ship a little bit, got enough points in the end, but it was only just enough. And that leads us to our chief focus, really, because looking at the way this worked out chronologically, it was a bit more chaotic. But to all intents and purposes, Woking, Wealdstone, and York, over the season at least, did enough. It meant, Aaron, didn't it, that the whole thing came down to the game that TNT, in some respects, correctly picked. The only goalless game of the day in the end, wasn't it? But my goodness me, the tension in that stadium. Before the game, during, and at the end was palpable, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Listen, as soon as we arrived at the stadium, you could feel it. You could feel the tensions. There was a lot of excitement, and I think both teams felt that they were going to go on and win the game. Everyone was looking on the positive side, but underneath all of that, you could see that there was a real tension in the air. And the game kind of, would I say the game played out like that? Not really. I'd say that Ebbsfleet just handled the pressure way better than Bournemouth did. Obviously, it was always going to be an emotional day, because Luke Garrard, after 9 years as the manager, was going to be managing his last game at the club. So there was already that emotion. There was the emotion of, him trying to keep them up, and the little rally that they'd had the 3 games prior and giving themselves a chance. But for me, I expected them to come out of the blocks. First half, I expected them to really go impose themselves and get the crowd off their feet, give the crowd something to be able to get behind, and they didn't do that. Ebbsfleet, on the flip side, controlled it, controlled the game, created some opportunities, and almost sent Bournemouth in at half time half defeated. Second half again, Bournemouth came out and they had a they huffed and puffed, but at no point did you ever feel that they were really going to go on and win the game. There were some contentious moments. I think that the handball could have easily been given as a penalty. I think the goal that was scored, I don't think that there was a foul there. I think, you know, Cousins clashes into his own man. So there were moments that if they had gone differently, Bournemouth could have gone on and easily won the game. But overall, did they do enough to stay up for the team that had to win? You know, there was no question. They couldn't get a draw. They had to go and get the 3 points. And over the 90 minutes, did they do enough to do that? I don't think so.
No, they didn't. And of course, Ebbsfleet had slightly less pressure on them because for them, a draw was enough. But had Bournemouth scored at any minute, Ebbsfleet would have been in major, major trouble. And they knew that. So it does bring its own pressures. Another, you know, having watched the bulk of the match back now myself, a massive headed chance for Billy Sass-Davies as well, which he connected well with, but just flew less than a foot over the bar. And the funny thing is, I'm watching the TV coverage from TNT Sport. One of the opening salvos, I think, from Matt Smith was football's all about moments. And my goodness me, you can pluck three or four from that game where if they'd gone slightly differently, Bournemouth could still be a National League club today. I think Luke Garrard deserves credit for two things. One, his incredible overachievement over an awful number of years with Bournemouth. Luke, have a good rest and come back at this level or above. I don't think he'll be short of suitors. That's for sure. And also for just getting that last tune out of the players in the last three or four games. They came so, so close when it looked like it was near enough over for them at Easter, didn't it? Nathan Ashmore and Luke Garrard had a conversation. We don't know the full extent of it, but it was somewhere around Ashmore keeping four clean sheets, and he did it. Included some wonderful saves in some of those games as well. But ultimately, they just came up short. Joe, your thoughts on goodbye to Bournemouth and Luke Garrard?
Yeah, I mean, I concur with Aaron that I did think going into the game that Bournemouth would show a better version of themselves than they did yesterday. I thought they would come out really strong, and I thought they'd win the game and find a way to win the game as they have done under Luke Garrard throughout his tenure. The fact that they didn't perhaps shows that, you know, perhaps now is the right time to move on and start afresh in the summer. And yeah, we wish Luke all the best. I'm sure he won't be out of a job for too long. I see there's a post at Stevenage, which I think might be nicely suited to him. But yeah, wish him well.
Good stuff. All right, turning our attentions then to the other end of the table. We've offered our congratulations many, many times to Chesterfield. They've actually found it really difficult to carry on after the celebrations of winning the title a month or so ago. They did ultimately get the job done at home on Saturday, but my goodness me, they got quite a scare from Devs Maidenhead United. The story of the game was that Chesterfield got into a first half lead, 2 goals in 2 minutes from Liam Mandeville and Joe Quigley. But Tristan Abrahams and Kev Locko, twice in 3 minutes, got Maidenhead level, only for Oliver Banks to get, I think, his 10th goal of the season in the 89th minute. And I guess Chesterfield finished the season there in the way they started, with late winning goals.
Yeah, listen, they've been brilliant. They've been brilliant entertainment. And even though they won the league, you know, at a canter in the end, they made it interesting. Like you say, you know, the amount of late goals that they scored to win games, you know, they had to dig deep in a lot of games. But fair play to Paul Cook and all of his team, because they did it. You know, throughout the season, all we kept saying was, you know, Chesterfield, they're making hard work of it, but they're getting the job done. And that's what they did this season. They threw caution to the wind when they had to. Yes, they have outstanding players. You know, they have the best squad in the division. There's no question. But they've had to work for it. Every team in the National League, when they've come up against them, wants to beat them and have made them work for the points. So you have to give them credit that they've actually gone out there and in those tough times, they've got the job done. And, you know, the end of the season, the 4 defeats in a row, you can write that off, because you know, the league's already won, and most of those lads are on the beach. But it was just written that they were going to win yesterday. You know, last game of the season in the National League, at home, in front of their own fans. And like you say, in Chesterfield fashion, they go and get a last-minute winner. And it probably just tops the whole thing off. The way that they did it, they started the season in that fashion, they've ended it in that fashion, and all of those fans can leave there happy after a win, looking forward to life in League Two.
Yeah, we wish Chesterfield well in League Two next season. I'm sure they'll have ambitions to follow in the footsteps of the likes of Stockport and Wrexham that have gone up again this season. They did lead by over 20 points at one point. In the final analysis, they won the league by 12 points from Barnet, who are worthy runners-up. I'm just going to touch briefly a little bit on the results because I want to use our time with you, Aaron, to look more at how these teams might fare in the playoffs. But a little bit of detail. Barnet finished second, 86 points. Highly credible effort. Kabamba with, I think, his 29th goal of the season. Kanu actually putting the gloss on the finish in the 94th minute. He's banged a few more goals in this season, something that's maybe been missing from Idris's game. And Danny Collins, one of the players of the season, also weighed in with a goal in that one. But for Kidderminster, they were obviously already down. They got a goal back on the hour mark, but it proved only to be consolation for them. Bromley finished third, 5 points behind Barnet. 81 points, though, a tremendous effort. Although they were beaten on the last day by Gateshead, who just won't go away for anybody. Olamola gave Bromley a lead. But in those last 15 minutes, when you might have forgiven Gateshead for being very tired and on their last legs, Greg Olley and Lewis Story got the winning goal in the 88th minute. A nice finish for him. Particularly given that he had to play part of the previous game in goal in midweek. That's another story now confined to history. But he made a couple of good saves when he was in goal up there at Gateshead on Wednesday night. Fair play to him for that. Altrincham got the job done in an unfussy way against Oxford City. They might have hoped for more goals and a more rousing win, but a Regan Linney penalty got them through 1-0. That meant that they secured home status, as expected. The same thing happened for Solihull Moors, who we've already mentioned, beat York City 1-0. Jack Stevens in the 87th minute, and Solihull, another team that goes right to the wire. And then that left the last place to be decided, didn't it, between chiefly Halifax and Aldershot. But if they both slipped up, then Southend could have crept through the back door. They didn't in the end. Southend, despite taking an early lead with Scott Morris, they eventually succumbed 2-1 to Rochdale. It's a highly creditable win for Rochdale there. Kean Hayes, who's been a revelation, and Devante Rodney with the goals for them. Okay. Halifax found their form, didn't they, on the day. They took control of the situation for that last place. Aaron, I know you were at Boreham Wood, but you'll have caught up with the other games. They haven't always been renowned as the top goal scorers, but they do love a clean sheet, Halifax, and they got both yesterday, and they got it done with some aplomb.
Yeah, listen, huge credit to Halifax because there was so much pressure on them. You know, obviously, it's not their fault that they had to play so many games in such a short space of time. I think it was 4 games in a week, you know, or in 8 days. So for those players to be able to come through that and in a high-pressure situation, be able to go and give the performance that they gave, absolutely outstanding. Outstanding and delighted for the manager because he's had to work under difficult circumstances in getting his team prepared week after week and having the disappointments of games being called off through no fault of their own, you know, in terms of the players and the management. So, huge credit to them. I must say, I felt like they might miss out. I thought, you know, having the last couple of games that they played at Accrington, not getting the wins. You know, a couple of draws there. I thought the final day, they've worked so hard, it might just be a bridge too far. But
absolutely, like,
fair play to them. You know, they dug it out, and that's what good teams do. You know, when you need to get that result, you dig it out, you find it from somewhere. And what that means for those lads moving forward, having to go and now play again midweek, and then if they get through at the weekend, how much they've got left in the tank, we'll see. But first of all, huge credit for, again, another fantastic season for them. Let's see what the playoffs bring.
Absolutely. I was at the Chigwell Construction Stadium. I watched, as I have done all season, I've been totally spoilt. I've watched a roller coaster play out in front of me. I've seen all the shots score more goals than probably many, many years, and concede a lot more as well. And that whole season was encapsulated, really, in a game that I watched yesterday where they went behind. They came from behind to lead. They got pegged back. They went behind and they scored again. There was a couple of goals beyond the 90-minute mark. But ultimately, I think we always knew, with the news coming from Halifax, that it wouldn't have mattered what Aldershot had done yesterday. Credit to 752 fans coming to cheer on the Shots, and they literally made the hair stand on end a couple of times for me yesterday. The way they greeted the team, the way they roared them on at half time when they were 1-0 down and said, "Come on, guys, keep going," and the reception that they gave their team at the end. I'm sure that would have been reflected, you know, in many grounds across the country on the final day of the season. But it was heartwarming to watch. Myself and all Aldershot Town supporters have been royally entertained this season by Tommy Widdrington. Thank you very much for the roller coaster ride. We've unbuckled now, and we wish Halifax well in the playoffs. It was a huge uplift for Aldershot from 18th place last season to 8th, and that magnificent FA Cup run as well. So no complaints from the Red and Blue Army at all. After the game, I caught up with a couple of players, and one of them, it was quite emotional circumstances. May or may not be the last time we see him in the red and blue of Aldershot Town, but Lauren Tollage scored his 25th goal of the season. And as he stood receiving the adulation, I caught up with him briefly.
Lauren, emotional scenes here at Dagenham. 750 Shots fans. The season's over, and you had the last word, or one of the last words, with your 26th goal of the season. Just try and sum up how you're feeling. It's not going to be playoffs, but you gave it everything.
Yeah, it's hard time because we gave everything. Halifax won, you know, they won. Yeah. So, yeah, it's been an unbelievable season. We finished with a draw.
A word for your teammates. You dug deep. You found a little bit extra. It just wasn't enough in the end.
Yeah, it wasn't enough. We tried to push. To be fair, Jordi makes some good saves. That's unlucky. We didn't win this game.
You're a proud captain of this football club, yeah?
Yeah, being proud. Now, that was a dream for me. Like, before the season, I said, like, my dream was to be the captain of Aldershot, and my dream came true. So, yeah, proud to be the captain of this team and of this football club.
We understand that football has its ways. We know there may be a decision for you ahead of the time, but we hope to see you next year back in Aldershot, where you are contracted, and we thank you for everything.
Thank you very much for you guys, the club, and everyone. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
That was Lauren Tollage. And I bumped into an old mate as well after the game, who was definitely involved in the award ceremonies at Dagenham. Friend of the podcast, Josh Rees.
Josh, I just see you got runner-up in the player of the season. And damn it, runner-up in the goal-scoring stakes as well in the FA on, got that one today. But an enjoyable season?
Yeah. I think it had its shares of ups and downs. If it started the season, it was a tough start for us, missing quite a few key players, and the results weren't really going our way. But credit to the staff and the players post-Christmas, I think, won a really good run, and that culminated in obviously the gaffer getting the manager of the month last month. And it's been a kind of a season of fine margins. I think a few of the draws we could have turned into wins, and we might have been in the same position Aldershot were in today, fighting for the playoffs. And yeah, it's, overall, it's been sort of a season, a good season, but one that can definitely improve on.
We talked earlier on in the season, and you mentioned that you perhaps hadn't been released forward as much or been able to get forward to get those goals, but they certainly flowed for you in the second half of the season, didn't you? And I guess at the moment, you'll be looking for more of the same at the start of next season.
Yeah, I think we found sort of a formula of playing which involved getting sort of our players that can get the goals, like me, Inny, Hilly, all in sort of good positions, and the performances then built. There was more of a solid structure behind us, and again, credit to the staff and the players for buying into it. And yeah, I know once I get going in this league, I'm always able to chip in with the goal. Said I rely a lot on my teammates to create those chances, and I think credit to them. Some real big performers over the second half of the season, and it was a massive help to us in sort of the upturn of our form.
Sadly, neither Dagenham or Aldershot will take part in the playoffs, but I know you're a lover of the game and you'll be watching them closely over the next week or so.
Yeah, no, I think the National League players have proved in the last few years to be really exciting, and I think you've got some really good teams in there, and it's going to be, said, some interesting, you can't really call it. I think this year is probably the most open the league's been, by Chesterfield, who were the deserved winners, but other than that, it's been, said, every game you couldn't really call, and said some teams that have got in the playoffs have sort of maybe overachieved, and there's teams down the bottom who you'd never have thought be down the bottom this season. So yeah, no, really looking forward to it.
Great stuff. Have a good summer break, and we'll catch up with you next season.
Top man, Rob. Cheers, mate.
That was Josh Rees. Aaron, another prolific season for him. I think the Frank Lampard of the National League, isn't he? Another 16 goals. Seemed to have worked something out with Ben Strevens in the latter part of the season that allowed him to get forward more. And you've got to let a player like that get forward, because his timing, his ability to be in the right place is probably unmatched from a midfielder in this division.
Well, I call him the Frank Lampard of the National League, because he has that ability to just arrive like Frank Lampard used to do for West Ham and for Chelsea. And I think that he's taken on a real responsibility at Dagenham. You know, when Inny Effiong was out injured, they needed someone who was going to be able to step up and put the ball in the back of the net. And it was almost like Josh said, yeah, you know what, I'm going to be that man. I'm going to be the one that will step up. And in times when they weren't even necessarily playing well, Josh would come up with some big, big goals. And then that breeds the confidence back into the team. So, you know, he's been instrumental in all the good work that Dagenham have done this season. And he's just a big player. At this level, he's one of the best in terms of galvanising a team and scoring really, really big goals. So no surprise that he's, again, managed to go and get, you know, double figures from midfield. You know, he's an outstanding player, and he's a great lad as well. You expect that from him, and he never disappoints.
Absolutely. Huge credit to Inny Effiong, by the way, who won the Daggers Golden Boot with 17 goals despite being out for 3 months of the season. Terrific effort from him, and he didn't mind celebrating against his old side when he scored either, and I've got no issue with that. Spoke briefly with Ben Strevens, not captured on any audio from it, but he felt that that Dagenham and Redbridge had pulled together a real spirit between the team and a connection with the fans again. So it's work in progress at Dagenham. They finished 15th. Just one other game to mention, and Joe, we'll bring you in on this one, and then we'll really focus in the last few minutes on those playoffs. But if Aldershot supporters saw their season encapsulated in one game yesterday, so without a shadow of doubt, the Dorking Wanderers losing 3-4 at home to Hartlepool. And you knew they wouldn't go down without a fight, Joe.
No, and, you know, as you say, 4-3 is a Dorking game all over. And in some ways, it's nice that they've bowed out in that way and that they've continued to entertain right until the last. And yeah, obviously for Hartlepool, obviously they have had another underwhelming season. You know, I think there's some signs of hope there for them. Obviously, Deezer Ouvray with two more goals. He's once again been prolific for them. And Joe Gray's sort of gone under the radar. I think not many people have talked about him as being one of the better players, but that's now 13 goals for him. He's had a really good season. And yeah, I'm really excited to see and intrigued to see what Dorking can do now in the next couple of weeks. Obviously, Mark White will also have his ideas as to what he wants to keep and move on. And if they can keep players like, you know, Charlie Carter, who was on the score sheet again yesterday, then they're going to have a really good shot at bouncing back. But yeah, I mean, just on Dorking in general, I think they've been a breath of fresh air for the National League. You know, the honesty, how open and well Mark White speaks, and just the way that they've gone about things has been really refreshing. And I hope they get back to the National League in time.
And Aaron, just coming to you on this one, there's obviously an element of a rebuild required there, but the fact that Dorking have gone down, there's probably three or four players in that squad who, had they stayed up, they'd have had to move on from. But then you look at it, one level down, players perhaps a little bit older, a bit more experienced, they might be able to do a pretty solid job one division below towards the latter end of their career. I mean, a good example of that would be Tony Craig, who, despite Dorking's defensive fragilities, he did hold that defence together for a lot of the season, and he walked away with the player of the season in their presentation after the game.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think they have got players in their squad that probably some of the ageing players that would probably have looked to drop down a level anyway. So the fact that they've gone down, they're perfectly placed to be able to help them get back to the National League. I've no doubt whatsoever that Dorking will be there or thereabouts next season in the National League South, because they've just got a winning mentality there. You know, Mark White, he's such a demanding manager. I don't know if there's a more demanding manager in the division, you know, and they are a team that they'll excite. Their games will always have goals, but they've proven over the years, from where they've come from to where they've ended up, is an incredible achievement. You know, 12 promotions, I think. Unfortunately, in football, there is always going to be an upside and a downside. And this is the first time that they've been relegated. This is the first real disappointment that they've had to face, you know, of that magnitude. So how will they bounce back? What will Mark White do? Will he still choose to continue to manage the team? I have no doubt that he will. But I think that they're good. They're well placed to be able to go on, get back to the National League and learn from the mistakes that they had this year. But one thing that I know from Mark White is he will look to bring in characters. He'll look to bring in the right characters. He's been critical of players this season, saying that they didn't have what it took to be able to handle the pressure. In the summer, he will look to go and bring those types of players in. And what they've done over the last 2 years is put their name on the map, you know, for players dropping down the levels or in terms of bringing players in on loan. They're definitely going to be able to get a better calibre of player than they would have been able to do a couple of years ago. So they're in a great position. I've no doubt that Mark White will want to go and get another promotion on his very colourful CV. And yeah, I expect to see them back in the National League very, very soon.
All right, Len, let's focus in on those playoffs that sit ahead of us this week. As we record this, there are one or two rumblings of rumours about sides that may or may not be taking part in the playoffs. We can't get into that. Some news may break, some news may not break. But assuming that the six teams that we have heard are going to be in the playoffs, Joe and Aaron, I want you to take one of the two clubs each that have got through to the semi-finals already and will host the winners of the eliminators. And I want you to give me one more team that you think might get there and might push Barnet and Bromley all the way. So starting with you then, Joe, Bromley's credentials, and who else do you think might push them?
Yeah, obviously Bromley in there again, got there last year. You know, I think they've continued to build nicely under Andy Woodman. He'll be confident that he can go again. Obviously, with Michael Cheek up front, they're always going to have a chance of winning games of this magnitude. Yeah, you know, I think they made lots of changes yesterday, and they have sort of petered a little bit towards the end, given that their top three was all but assured. But I think that they'll be a good bet again. Obviously, you've got that home advantage, and they have been good at home this season. Before I pick another team, I would just say this. I think this is the first time ever that the playoffs, every single side, I could make a case for them going and winning it. But usually you have one or two teams that stand out, but I genuinely could make a case for any of them. I'm going to make a case for Halifax. I know they only just got in at the end, but I think sometimes finishing away from, you know, in an away position actually can suit some teams. And Halifax are better on the road. You know, they're better playing away from home. Their style of play is better suited to that. And obviously, they are going to have to play two away games against Bromley. Against Altrincham and then against Bromley. I just think that Chris Millington's a really impressive manager. I think, you know, no one will expect Halifax to go and win it. But he probably will have that belief and confidence of in his group to be able to do it. They keep a lot of clean sheets, and they've got better and better as the season's gone on, and especially hitting good form now. And I wouldn't be at all surprised that that team that just creeps in at the end goes and upsets the odds. But yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting.
Thank you very much, Joe. I think that's quite a brave prediction there. So well done for nailing your colours to the mast. Aaron, then, let's look at the credentials, if we can, in the 2 minutes we got left. Barnett, and who you think might push them all the way?
Well, yeah, Barnett, I think they've got a huge chance. I think Dean Brennan, you know, his management style, very demanding, very... he's very motivational as well. And they've got such a strong spine throughout their team. You look at Collins, you look at Pritchard, Kabamba. Throughout their spine, they're very, very strong. And I think they're strong in all departments. You know, they've got your X-Factor players, your Zach Brunts. You've got, Callum Stead this season has been outstanding. You know, in his first full season at the club, outstanding. So I really think if I was going to choose one team, they would be my pick. But outside of that, I really like Altrincham. I think that, you know, their front three, Linney, Newby, and obviously their main man, Con Clark. I think that on that stage, they could really, really step up and cause a few problems. And with Ethan Ross in goal, who I think is probably the best goalkeeper in the division, I think they've got a real, real chance. I love the way that Phil Parkinson goes about his business. I could say that about a number of managers, but I really, really like the way their style of play, the way they go about it. And yeah, I think they could be the team that causes an upset.
And I concur with you guys. I do think genuinely all the teams involved have a chance. Obviously, it's more difficult for those that have to play two games to get to Wembley, and particularly for those who have to go away from home. We've underestimated Solihull Moors all season, so don't bet against them. And they go late into the games. And Gates said, I think we'd all agree on their day. When they have it, they probably play the best football in the division. So good luck to all those sides taking part in the playoffs. And Aaron McLean, thank you very much for joining us again. We'll see you over the next couple of weeks again, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Okay, we're going to have a look at the National League South now. And there were a lot of stories, of course, on the final day, but none for me bigger than Avely reaching the playoffs. A fantastic achievement. That's like a well-budgeted side winning the title for me. Danny Scopes, the Avely manager, is joining us, not for the first time this season. Danny, congratulations. What an achievement. I know already your mind will be going into how you're going to compete in those playoffs, but just pull the handbrake on. Just take a snapshot of where we are now and tell us how good it feels to have got Avely into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think you're 100% right. I think we need to do that. I'm probably guilty of not doing that. And I think football does that to you at times when you're involved in it. You move on quickly and you forget the good the successes and you move on to the next thing because that's how it works during the season. But I said to a lot of people yesterday, I think we have, rightly so, as you said, take this game in context and take the season in context so far and just be really proud of what a successful achievement it is. And, you know, we were written off at the start of the season. We are a low-budget club, say how it is, and we've had to go through losing players and losing good players and replacing people. So I think it is important that we reflect on it and be really proud of what we've achieved. And as a football club as a whole, I think that's really important.
I think a lot of us from the outside looking in admired the start. We did suspect you might fall away as you lost players, as the injuries came in. But you found a way to stay there. You never dropped far outside those playoffs and you timed your arrival back into them superbly. You've actually done it, if I've got this right, with a few players that you had with you in step four, didn't you, Danny?
Yeah, we've carried a few with us. We were fortunate when I took the club on board in step four, and a few of the boys were playing at step four, and probably rightly they should have been playing at step three or above that. So we have to remember that they were there for dropping down the levels. It seemed to happen quite a lot, and I always felt that they could go on and achieve new things and carry on. And I didn't feel all the squad probably could go up with us as we went up to step three, but we took the gamble and we took a lot with us as well. We've lost some on the way, but yeah, I think we've got Harry Gibb, Jason Ring, who was suspended yesterday, unfortunately, and we missed the final of the playoff as well. Kenny Allure, Manny Ogorinde, you know, they're four that come through with us all the way from step four, and they just keep growing, and that's what, you know, it gives me great pride to watch them grow as people and pick them up from where they were. Kenny's a great story. He was struggling to get into teams at step four. He'd had a couple of clubs that hadn't quite worked out. And I just see something in him that I quite liked. And he come in as a quiet, shy boy in our dressing room. And he was a big leader for us yesterday. And he was immense yesterday. He ran over nearly 11K yesterday. He scored a fluky cross that we've been working on in training, which was important. And it's just a good, I like that story. I like them success stories. And I've managed from the bottom and played at the bottom levels of non-league football and worked my way up. And I want my players to do that as well. And I think if you give faith in them and trust in them, then they can do that. And they come good yesterday for me and really delivered.
Joe?
Yeah, just that was also on the scores yesterday, who I think has been magnificent this season and will be in my team of the season, is CG Odolusi. What a season he's had.
Yeah, another one. He came into us last year and he had a bit of played at Leicester. He'd not done too well in his own regards. He wanted to, not quite happy with it. He tried to go abroad to try and get some games. It not quite worked out. So he'd come in sort of mid-season and sort of lost his way a little bit. And he probably had to wait 6 or 7 weeks to try and get an opportunity with us. And he was really patient. He was really calm with that. He was a centre-half and he'd come in at centre-half and I watched him a couple of games at centre-half and thought he would do a good job for us as a centre midfielder, and he went into centre midfield and I don't think he's missed many teams since that period. And yeah, he's done really well. He's our penalty taker. He's got a cool head. I think that was 12 maybe penalties he scored on the run, which is really, you know, that's a talent in itself. And yeah, he's been a real big part of the team centrally in midfield for us, and you know, it's a real team effort for us. And, you know, Sid has been a big part, and I think he'd be the first to say that as well. And we don't win anything as Averley Football Club without everybody playing their part and everyone doing well. And it has been a real, real team effort from, you know, from front to back in the squad.
Great stuff. Well, look, we're going to come back and focus a little bit in on those playoffs in just a minute, but let's just wrap up some of the other action from yesterday. Yeovil, of course, secured the title the weekend before. On goal difference in the end, Chelmsford managed to finish second. They did so with a 1-1 draw at Chippenham, Joe, and you were there.
Yeah, I was there yesterday to watch Chippenham. Good game. Chelmsford, I feel, probably should have won the game, had more of the chances. George Alexander managed to get another goal for his ever-increasing tally, and he played really, really well, as did Chelmsford in general. But Chippenham, as they have done all season under Gary Horgan, they've kept on going. And I think they've got, after the 80th minute in the league this season, Chippenham, or certainly one of the highest. So they goal in the 83rd minute. Bit of a mistake from the Chelmsford goalkeeper, Dylan Berry, who signed this week, formerly of Hendon. He let the ball see it was going to roll out of play, but then had it taken off him, brought down Aaron Amadi Holloway. And yeah, it was a really good game. Good advert, really, for the National League South. Chippenham put a lot of good players not in the squad, tried to look at a couple of their youngsters through their academy. The fact that they were able to go toe-to-toe with a Chelmsford side, full strength and trying to get second, is credit to the work Gary Horgan has done. And I was really impressed with him. I think he's a really classy bloke and done a fantastic job there. And I spoke to Gary after the game.
Gary, you must be quite pleased that your side were able to face a Chelmsford side who wanted to secure second, and given that you had so many first team players out, you still managed to give them a game.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt that, if I'm totally honest, given that I'm going to say that we didn't have anything to play for, we did, because we wanted to finish as high as we could. So, you know, for us, that's secured us a 12th place finish, and other than the playoff year where we finished seventh, that's our highest finish at this level. And given we had a new group, that's, I think, a success for us this year and an achievement. And if we can keep the group together, then we'll improve again next year. But yeah, look, absolutely. You know, we knew that Chelmsford needed really to win just to make sure that they were absolutely certain that they weren't playing an extra game in the playoffs, and they're a really good side, and I don't want people to lose sight of the fact that up until about 2 or 3 weeks ago people were saying, cool, can they go and catch Yeovil? So they're a really good team, so we knew that they were in it, but I thought we handled everything, and bar the goal in the first half, I felt we were the better side. And you know, we've gone and hit the post, the keeper's made a couple of good saves, so I felt we were more than worth the point. And actually, like you said, we played some nice stuff in and amongst it as well.
And Craig Fazemade got the goal for Chippenham. As a manager, how frustrating is it, given how phenomenal he is off the ball, that he perhaps doesn't hit the target a little bit more regularly? I'm sure that's a conversation you've had before.
Yeah, look, what we know here is that we've got a lot of footballers that have got good potential. We have to work hard to coach them, and we do. And like I said, so we take the cliche, we take a lot of rough diamonds that either other clubs won't take chances on, and we feel that we can do something with. And Craig's one of those fantastic out of possession, like you said. His work rate's second to none. He knows that he's got some stuff that he needs to work on, and we do that. We get him in an extra day a week, and we're trying to work on those things with him. But the brilliant thing about that is that he keeps getting into those areas. He never drops his head, and you know, we always say to him that when he comes off disappointed, look, you'll get another chance next week, because that's why you're here and that's why you're at this football club. But the good thing is he wants to work on those as well, and he's keen to work on them, and he listens, and hopefully we can get him better again with a bit more work. But yeah, look, absolutely, Craig knows there's things he needs to work on. We know that as well, and it's up to us to like I said, we don't have the luxury of going out and getting experienced players who do this. We have to work with them and work with them really hard.
And you talked about players with promise. One of those I'm sure everybody will ask you about is Dan Ellison. He came on obviously in the second half. Obviously there's probably a good chance that could be his last game for Chippenham Town, potentially.
Quite possibly. So Dan's. Well, it feels like he could, if we'd let him, he could have done a tour of EFL clubs this year, the UK tour, really. So the reason he didn't play today is he's played a lot of football in the last couple of weeks. He's had a lot of 90 minutes, but he's away to Blackpool next week. He's been in with Bristol Rovers this week. So what we probably will have to do at some point is stop him going, and that's not to, you know, we've tried to facilitate everything with Dan, but he can't go and trial at all 92 clubs. Somebody has to take a chance on him. I think somebody should. I think he's good enough. He's got good promise. Like you said, he's only just turned 18. Defensively, he's sound. Again, he's someone that needs a tiny bit of work. But I think if you went around a lot of academies, particularly in the lower levels, maybe Cat 2, Cat 3, they'd be better than a lot of 18-year-olds that are within the setups already. And not many would have played as many men's football games at National League South level with the numbers that he's put up. You know, we look at his numbers, and he's one of the best defenders. It's not just his promise, it's the numbers he's posting in terms of blocks, interceptions, headed goals. He's right up there, and on some of those, like I said. So yes, possibly when he came on, I said exactly the same thing. Potentially, Dan, this might be your last ever game. And if I'm honest, I hope it is, because for us, success for us looks different to other clubs. Success for us is bringing on the young lads, and if we can get them back into the pro game, brilliant. If not, and we can give them a really good standard of football and improve them as footballers and humans, then we'll do that.
And just finally, obviously, you finished 12th. It has been a successful season for you. More improvement, even if not in league standing. Obviously, you would have seen the scores earlier, the fact that Bournemouth Wood have now been relegated. You've got Dorking coming down. It's going to be another tough season, isn't it, next year? And or even though this is the end of this season, you'll probably be straight on that phone trying to plan for next season.
Yeah, yeah, I'll be on the phone to you, I think. I feel like I say this every year, but I think it's truth and it's reality that the league seems to get stronger every year, particularly as it seems to be at the moment. The sides coming down are all Southern-based. If they all come in and there's movement within the league, then potentially you get three stronger teams coming down. This year, not so much, but last year we welcomed, two full-time teams, which clearly gives them the advantage. We'll next year for me feels like it's going to be another tough one. And again, because of the way we operate, our pool of players might suddenly there'll be a year where we'll have even bigger challenges. But yeah, look, we're up for the challenge. And like I said, we had a new group this year. And let's not forget, we've progressed this year, finished 12th. In what was, and if I look back, and you'll probably know better than I did, I definitely said it, but I know four or five National League South managers said it, this is the toughest National League South ever this year, and we finished 12th, so that's a massive achievement for this club.
That was Gary Horgan, and you were a busy boy, weren't you, Joe? You caught up with a couple of people from Chelmsford as well afterwards.
Yeah, well, George Alexander's usually the one for a hat-trick, so he couldn't get it yesterday, so I got myself a hat-trick. I spoke to two more. I spoke to Alexander himself, and I also spoke to someone who I've been really impressed with, Chelmsford assistant and head of recruitment, Adam Drew.
I'm here with Chelmsford head of recruitment, Adam Drew, after a final day 1-1 draw. Adam, it's a 1-1 draw, and you finished as day second, which is what you wanted, but slightly disappointed that you didn't win that one, I feel.
Yeah, I think so. If you look at the first half, I thought we were really good. Had lots of chances, just not clinical in front of goal. Second half, up the hill, I still felt we played well, still created really good moments. I don't really want to talk about their goal because it was not the best. But look, it's 1-1. We finished second, highest the club's ever finished. So that's a massive plus. Obviously, we finished in the playoffs last year. We wanted to better that. And to finish second, yeah, monumental effort. And everyone's really pleased. Now, obviously, it's not done yet. We've still got hopefully two more games to go. But yeah, finish second's pretty special.
And you, as you say, you've managed to finish second and improve on last year. Why do you think you've improved on last year? Obviously, you were a good side last year, an even better side this. What do you think's been the difference?
I just think squad depth. I think we've kept 18 this year. If you look at our bench and even the people that weren't available today, like Dave, the captain, I just think any one of those boys could come in and fit into the first team, and I think that's really helped us get over the line. So when we've had injuries, the replacements have come in and done really well. We've been quite fortunate with injuries. I think we've not had too many, but every time we've had one, the boys that have come in have stepped up and done really well.
And you did say you didn't want to talk about the goal you conceded, so we won't. We're talking about the goal you scored. George Alexander, another goal for him. Obviously, given that you are in charge of the recruitment for Chelmsford, how pleased is it that you waited so long to get your man and he's now firing and could be the one to get you over the line and promoted?
Yeah, he's been brilliant. I actually took him on loan at Concord, and we've been after him for a little while. He is probably what we needed. I mean, Jonesy and Freddie have both got really good attributes and are real assets to this squad. And George just compliments that. You see his finish today. It was so clinical, wasn't it? Like, he took his time, and he probably was the only player in our team that would have scored that goal. To be fair, he's probably a little bit disappointed that he didn't get a few more today. He had his chances, but he's been brilliant. I think he's got 7 league goals for us and not played that many games. So yeah, his goal return's been excellent. His work rate up there, he's been a real big bonus for us.
And obviously, given that you're in charge of the recruitment, you must be really proud of the season that Jermaine Francis has had. Obviously, come from Hashtag United, two lads obviously that you've signed from them, with Ben Brooks as well. How brilliant has Jermaine been this year in stepping up and being one of the best in his position in the league?
Yeah, it's a team effort, but yeah, he's been he's been outstanding. And what I love about Jermaine is his work rate. He'll give you 110% going forward and going back. So defensively, he's really good. And going forward, he's got better. It was something Simo spoke to him about at Christmas with his numbers and his assists and goals. And he's stepped up to the plate. But yeah, Jermaine's done really well. And Callum Watts as well. Callum came from Grays. You know, I watched him a couple of times last year at Stepford at Grays. He's come in, he earned a deal in the summer, and he's played loads of games. So yeah, I think it's more pleasing when you sign the boys from Stepford that come up and do really well. I think that's really pleasing, and they deserve all the credit they get.
And now, looking forward to the playoffs, obviously you've got that game in the semi-finals. Over the whole season, you have comfortably been the second best team, I feel, as a collective in the division. How do you transfer being the second best team into the playoffs and ensuring you win them?
Oh, it's a great question. Like, it's an absolute lottery, isn't it? And I just hope that we turn up and perform to the levels that we do, and hopefully that should be enough to get us over the line. But we know that all the teams in the playoffs are going to be really difficult. There's some really good teams in that. But yeah, if we play to our capability, we, like you say, we've proved that we are the second best team. It's not a fluke, is it, over 46 games that we finished second? So yeah, if we can emulate how we've performed for the whole of the season, then yeah, we're confident, and just keep fingers crossed.
And a word for your supporters that came down here today. Obviously a brilliant effort by all of them to come all this way to Chippenham in what some could say was a bit of a dead rubber, given that you already had home advantage. They were brilliant today.
They've been unbelievable all season. Like, it's just grown and grown and grown, and you've seen it firsthand today. They sing for 90 minutes. They've done that every game, and the numbers have got bigger and bigger, and special mention to them. They've been fantastic.
George, ultimately at the end of the regular campaign now for Chelmsford, finished second. How do you reflect on the season so far with Chelmsford?
Yeah, since I've come in, we've obviously like won a lot of games, and it's gone well, to be fair. We've had a couple ups and downs, but we got a good squad and we stuck together. Like, they was in this position when I came, they was flying, and then I feel like I've helped add something to that since I've come in, and we've obviously finished second, and it's a tough league like to get out of as it is, but to finish second, praise to everyone really.
And it was a draw today. Are you slightly disappointed as a group that you didn't get more from it, and that perhaps you didn't put away one or two more chances?
Yeah, like, of course we wanted to come here, win, and be on that run of just winning games, but the objective was to finish second, and we've done that. But it would have been nice to win 1-0 or 2-0. We should have had it wrapped up early. We had so many chances, and then get a clean sheet as well going into the playoffs. But it is what it is. And if you look back at our results since I've been here anyway, if we've had a draw or a loss, we go on a run. So it's two games at the end of the day now. If we get two more clean sheets and I score or someone else scores, club gets promoted. So,
and talk us through the goal.
So I think Ruffy's played it into me, and I actually think I've took a baggy touch, and it looks like I'm unbelievable, but it's bounced up, and the defenders dived in, lucky enough, and I've just rolled it in, so I can't moan at that.
And you've represented three teams this year, obviously Slough, Dartford and now Chelmsford. What's the difference, would you say? Why have Chelmsford been that much better than the two teams you've also played for?
It's without, like, I don't know how to explain it. I just think when you get a winning run, everything's good. Whereas, obviously, it's sad to see Dartford go down. But, like, if you're losing, it does become a habit. Whereas, since I've come here, we've been winning games. And Slough have just missed out. Unlucky, like, not to get in the playoffs, to be fair to them. But it's just that winning mentality of just keep winning and believing that we're better than everyone else. Bar Yeovil, as the season's ended, we was the second best team in the league. So,
and Chelmsford fans were a little bit worried when you came off at the end, thinking that you might be injured, obviously going into the playoffs. Can you reassure them that you're not injured?
Yeah, I'll be alright. It was just that I've a couple ankles that I've troubled with over my life, so I'll just rest them up and I'll be alright. I just didn't want to let the team down, so I just said to Simo, it's better that I come off.
And you've now got the playoffs ahead of you. Obviously you get the semi-final eliminator for finishing second. Obviously you must have the belief within your group that you can go all the way, given that you were the second best team all season.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, I think if you look at any playoffs in any league, the team that usually comes the closest doesn't go up. But I feel like we can change that with this group of boys. just because momentum, but we've had a good run as well. It's not like we've been losing games and struggled to finish second. We've done our job, obviously drawing today, but I feel like it's in our, like, we're good enough to beat anyone on our day. So they probably believe the same, but I think 11v11 it can go either way, but I think I fancy us. So.
And just finally, obviously you've had a couple of loan spells now. Do you feel you've found a home here in Chelmsford?
Yeah, 100%. Like, it was the decision I made myself, really, that I wanted to get a club that I'm actually signed to instead of being on loan where I've got that tag. It was all right, like, National League, being Bromley, but I'm not playing, so I was on loan. And then it came to a decision where I said, like, I'd rather go settle down and sign for a club that's my club now, so hopefully get promoted with them.
Great stuff and great work there from you, Joe. A word on Chelmsford, Danny. They're there on merits, aren't they? And how did your couple of tussles go with them this season?
Yeah, they were one of the toughest teams we played this year. They beat us twice and beat us comfortably at home. I thought they were really good at home. And they've got a real good young group of players with a little bit of a mix of experience with Dave Winfield and a couple of others in there. And I think Robbie and Mickey Spillane and Adam as well with his recruitment, who I know well from my time at Concord working with him. I think they've done a great job. And I think we've been one of the best teams in the division. So, yeah, full credit to them. They beat us at their place. We had 5 sent off, I think, that day. So that was probably didn't help up.
Yeah, that's never a good look, finishing with a 5-a-side team, is it? On 11-a-side ball.
Not good, yeah. As well, I think brilliant job, because I think if you look at the start of the season, a lot of people were doubting him, a lot of fans were probably doubting him as well, but I think they've come really good. And, you know, to finish second to Yeovil is amazing, really, isn't it?
And yeah, one thing I would add on Chelmsford is it was quite interesting yesterday. Man, got there early and speaking to some of the Chelmsford fans and even some of the Chelmsford staff, and they're not confident going into the playoffs, which baffles me really. You know, they're still not confident that Robbie Simpson's going to be able to take them through the playoffs, which really does baffle me given how good they've been this season. I think Robbie's done a fantastic job, and I think he's one of those managers that will never get the credit he deserves. Because he's done a fantastic job, and I think that they are the team to beat in the playoffs.
Fair enough, fair enough. The other side that pushed them all the way and secured one of those two vital second and third positions were Worthing, and a little bit of a stutter after Hinchelwood left, but they've come good again, haven't they? And chiefly, of course, we've been talking about the goals of Ollie Pearce. He scored in the 39th minute. I don't know if it was his 39th or his 40th goal of the season, but another player on the score sheet there that you've admired, Joe. And they got the job done comfortably enough in the end, despite a chaotic start. It was 2-2 after just 20-odd minutes in that one. But Worthing, like Chelmsford, will progress immediately to the semi-final stage of the playoffs and have that vital home game, Joe.
Yeah, and I think it was by a goal or so in the end. Chelmsford were agonisingly waiting to see what the in score was, given that if they'd won 5-2, then Worthing would have finished in second. But yeah, that would have been a really good one for the neutral yesterday. Weston and Worthing, two really good sides with the ball. Just a point on Brad Dolohan. I think Ollie Pearce has got the plaudits, but Brad Dolohan's really impressed me this season. Another one given a chance from their youth team, and he looks like he's been doing it for years. So I've been really, really impressed by him. And given so many players go on from Worthing to have good careers, I wouldn't be at all surprised. Not trying to sell him for you, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if there's teams coming in for him. I think he's been excellent.
And just coming to you, because we kind of assessed the credentials of Chelmsford, haven't we already, Danny? Worthy, excuse the pun, finishes in third place, aren't they? 84 points, terrific total. And just, you know, the merits of them, we've already talked about Pearson, Dolohan, but they're good all over the pitch, aren't they?
Yeah, really good. Yeah, got a real good style of play. I think they've improved that style as well this season. You know, they were very possession-based, but they've got a real cutting edge now where they can open you up, and if you drop off them or you press too high, they can go over the top of you. They can go around you or they can go through you. They've got all the options, and yeah, I think they've done a good job. To lose your manager at that vital stage is probably something that's really, really tough, but I think they made a real good decision bringing in an ex-player to take on the team. He knew the structure, he knew the principles. sensibles and just had to sort of keep them going. So I think that was a bold move for them to do that, and I think they've reaped the benefits of that as well.
You certainly have. Now, a vital component, you took care of business on the pitch yesterday, Danny, but a vital component in you making the playoffs was that Hampton and Richmond needed to lose at Maidstone. So Maidstone United have done you a favour, and now you've got to plot to beat them. They beat them 5-1, another couple from Sam Corn. They got off and running after just the second minute, and they did it comfortably in the end. A word initially for Hampton and Richmond, who are a little unlucky to miss out, aren't they? And then let's assess the merits of Maidstone United, who you have got to plot to beat now for the third time this season.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it was a real tough one for everybody yesterday. We were in the best place, I felt, because we had to know, we knew what we needed. We needed to win the game of football to get into the playoff, and we knew where we'd be. We wasn't quite knowing who we'd play at that moment. But I thought all the teams in the playoff probably didn't know where they were and what was the best way to go. So do you go for it? Do you not go for it? Do you rest players? Do you not rest players? And I think it was real hard mindset for everybody in there. And I think Maidstone probably just went, come on, let's do our job and let's put Hampton to the sword and get it done. And yeah, you know, we've got to go to Maidstone. We know that it's going to be a big crowd. It's loud. They're vocal. They've got a really good manager in George and Craig Fagan as an assistant. And they've got some real good players and some real good threats. And, you know, you don't get as far as they did in the FA Cup without being a good team as well. And they had a little bit of a wobble, but they showed good character and bounced back. And I think rightly deserved a place in that, you know, they got goals in them. And I think that's probably something we probably need to try and stop. We need to try and stop them scoring and defend really well. And hopefully we can get something going the other way with our goal scorers. And I think that's something about the playoff teams. I think if you look at all the playoff teams right through, taking the Oval out of that and Chelmsford down to us, they've all got good goals in them. You know, George has done well and Worthing have got goal scorers, and then Maidstone have got Matt Rush, who they took off us, and Mo Fowle, and some real good goal threats in there. And I think that shows, you know, if you have got goals at that end of the pits, then you can do well and get into the playoffs. And we've been able to do that with our own Charlie Hughes and Sidhu as well.
Now, obviously, you beat Bath City 2-0 yesterday. They are in the playoffs. They will play Braintree. Braintree might be one of those times that didn't know whether to stick or twist on Saturday. In the end, they lost 3-2 to Eastbourne Borough, who finished with 9 men. Admittedly, those 2 red cards were in the last 10 minutes, but it wasn't the perfect preparation for Braintree. They'll play Bath now. You're not involved in that one, Danny. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think that'd be a great game. Again, both got good forward lines. Aaron Blair's been excellent, hasn't he, this year for Braintree, and Cody Cook and Wilson have been really good for Bath. And yeah, Braintree's a tough place to go. Real hard place. They've got a really good home record. Defensively, they've been immense. I think if you look over the last 10 games, more than that, their defensive record's been excellent. So they don't concede many goals. And as I said, with Aaron at the other end, they always look a friend. So I think it's going to be a challenge for Bath to go there. But then I look at Bath's squad. They've got real good experience. You know, they're all good ages. They've got some boys between sort of 26 and 30 who've got good experience, and they will handle the big games really well. Probably Braintree a little bit. On the other hand, they're a bit younger maybe in certain areas. So that might play a part on the day. But it's going to be a tough game for Bath to go there. But like I say, I think they're both good teams and it could go either way.
Yeah, I guess ultimately that's what Bath missed out on. The opportunity to play that game at home, Joe, didn't they? They'll now go to Braintree. And I know you wanted to come in on that one.
Yeah, I just think Braintree, obviously, they're, as Danny said, brilliant season for them. I see Joe Grimwood was on the score sheet yesterday. He's been a revelation at the back from them. I think that the only disappointment for Angelo Harrop going into the playoffs is the fact that they have lost Shaquille Coulthurst, obviously recalled by Ebbsfleet, and then not really played. Disappointing for Angelo Harrop, but yeah, they are really good at home, and they'll fancy their chances of getting past Bath.
That's it. Yeah, Coulthurst did play in the penultimate game for Ebbsfleet, but he was on the bench on Saturday. Just coming on to Farnborough, I need to mention them, really. They pushed really close. Yes, they caught a bit of a nosebleed when they got near those playoffs, but they were the other side, Danny, that stood to benefit if you hadn't beaten Bath yesterday. Hampton Richmond, of course, lost, and Farnborough got their job done despite playing almost all of the second half with 10 men. Ricky Holmes and Ollie Pendlebury with their goals as they won 2-1 away at Mark Molesley's Weymouth. A hard luck word, I guess, for Farnborough.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think probably a little bit indifferent, haven't they, this season? They've been a little bit up and down, but they looked like they were coming good. They maybe ultimately peaked too early, maybe, as you said, and went on a real good run. We went there, they beat us 3-1 on the day and were really, really good. They had a real good experience across the back and some youthfulness and people like Ricky, who were, you know, always very smart players, Ricky Holmes. And yeah, I thought they were a really good side and I feared them at that point. And I just think, obviously, they just faltered near the end and just haven't been able to get over the line. But I just think that's no discredit to Farnborough. I just think it shows what a tough division it is. And there's no easy games in the division and anybody can beat anybody. And you've only got to look at the points totals from top to bottom and how close they are this year that probably proves that as well. So it is tough, but like I say, I think unlucky for Farnborough. I think they had a right good effort and a right good go and just a little bit unlucky at the end, maybe not to get over the line.
At the bottom end of the division, Hemel Hempstead got the point that they may or may not have needed away at already relegated Taunton Town. And that meant that Dartford, despite a 2-1 win against Truro City, confirmation of their relegation, I think, was probably realistically there in midweek, Joe, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And obviously, even though they, as you say, even though they managed to bow out with a win, it does bring to an end their time in the National League South. And yeah, it's going to be interesting for Dartford, obviously, because when you look at their team on paper, there's some good players individually, but there must be a reason why it's for them. Obviously, got rid of a good manager in Alan Dowson. You know, he's done well in this division before, and for AD Pennock, who really got going since he's come in there. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do in the summer because they'll be backed as one of the bigger hitters for that league. And if they can keep one or two of their players. Really disappointed for Rob Dre, a good friend of mine, and he's done a good job given what he's had thrown at him. And I have no doubt that he'll keep that squad together and add a couple and they'll be back.
Good stuff. Just wrapping up a couple of other games in the National League South. Slough completed their season, and I think they're up to about 21 games now, aren't they? Another late equaliser, 13 minutes from time, John Goddard penalty, 1-1 draw against Welling. And Danny, coming to you on this, obviously Scotty Davis has stepped up. He still plays as well. He's the highest level that anybody still plays and manages. That in itself is tough enough, but to have gone, 21-odd games unbeaten at home is phenomenal for any club at any level, isn't it?
Yeah, really good. Yeah, really pleased. They obviously, Scott had a slow start to the season and there was rumours, I think he actually said himself that he didn't feel he could carry it on. But I think they stuck together and him Slough got their heads around it. And I think they went on a really good run, as you say, really good at home. And if I'm honest, I think they probably gave us our toughest two games, I thought. And I think they beat us 2-0 in both games. And I thought they were the hardest team that we had to play against and just real tough to break down. I thought they'd people in the right places, a real good structure. And what Scotty gives them is that he can able to control it from on the pitch, which I sometimes wish I could do, but nowhere near that, unfortunately. But he can control it for the pitch. I think that's massive for Slough because he can sit in the back and drop in the back line and control it when the game needs it. And then he can step into midfield and be influential. And yeah, full credit for Scott because I know I did player manager back in 2007 at a lot lower level and it was really tough. So to be able to do that at step two National South is full credit to him and hopefully he can carry that on for as long as he possibly can. But I think Slough have got some real good players and that'd probably be a team that I'd look at next year that playoffs probably would be a good option for them because I think that team will mature and if he can keep them together, we'll kick on.
Yeah, in the end, Slough finished just 5 points behind the playoffs and a staggering 22 points ahead of the relegation zone that they were on the edge of when Scotty stepped up. Terrific job done by him there. In the end, both Tunbridge and St Albans finished in mid-table. 11th St Albans. Jeff is on the score sheet again, but a 2-2 draw there. And I'd love to round it up there, but I can't do that because I've got a Torquay fan sat here with us and they won 5-0. Too little, too late, but a nice finish to the season at Plainmoor, Joe.
Yeah, a really poor season overall, but a good finish at the end. And yeah, 5-0 win yesterday. All accounts, we were very, very good, albeit with a caveat that for as good as we were, haven't, were equally as poor. I'm delighted for Austin Booth, 35-yard volley yesterday. And I was clamouring in the summer that we should have gone for Austin Booth. He's a Torquay lad. His dad used to play for the club, and he's a Torquay fan at heart. So the fact that he was able to finish the season by securing safety against his former club in Taunton and then scoring on the final day at Playmore is brilliant for him. And just a word for Arkell Jude Boyd as well. It'll be the last time that we see him in a Torquay shirt. Been an absolute revelation this season for Torquay. And if he's not playing EFL football next year, I'd be very, very surprised. Another goal for him. And even though he's only been with us half a season, he would have been top scorer, I think, if he'd have stayed the whole season. He's playing right back. So, yeah, really good end to the season. And it's going to be really interesting now to see whether we stick with Aaron Downes as manager or whether we look to bring in a new manager. I know, Rob, you know my thoughts on that. And, yeah, it's going to be a really interesting one to watch.
Yeah, I'll share those thoughts when we finish recording. We're going to move on now to look with Luke Edwards, Dickie and Christian at the National League North.
Yes, thanks, Rob. Well, joining us to look over the North, of course, Dickie is here with us, but also we have Mr. Boston United stats man himself, Christian James. Hello, Christian.
Morning, how are we doing?
Very well, thank you. And the relegation battle was probably the standout in the National League North. It was between Blyth and Farsley. Rushall were also probably in there as well, but realistically, it was between Farsley and Blyth. And it was a bit of an anticlimax in the end because Blyth were pretty much out of it after half an hour, weren't they? They were 4-0 down and it was almost curtains for them. And at the same time, Farsley took the lead. So the second half became a bit of a non-event, really. There was no real drama, was there?
No, there weren't the twists and turns that you hope for as a neutral. Even 15 minutes in, I had a look at the scores. I saw Brackley were already 2-0 up at Blyth and Farsley were beating Buxton. The sides had come into that level on points. But yeah, Blyth playing a very strong Brackley team. Roberts scored twice in the first 15 minutes. Danny Newton got a brace for himself before the half hour. And they traded second half goals, Nicky Devedick's penalty on the hour. But I don't think truly there was ever going to be the comeback to end all comebacks at Croft Park. And it's a real shame for them. They finally confirmed the takeover, which they'd announced in February. And they had a big gate when Boston went up there. And it was sort of full of optimism. Blyth, they've dropped in at just the wrong time. They've not occupied a position in the bottom four all season. But you look at their position chart, it's just a downward trend. Last game of the season, they've spent, 75 minutes in the bottom four? But everyone says it's not where you start, it's where you finish. And Farsley have put them there. They won 2-0. A goal after 12 minutes for Tom Allen. And then Asenso scored just after half-time against a Buxton side that had very little to play for. And for the second time in three seasons, the Citadel was celebrating final day survival.
Yeah, the perfect fixture for Farsley, that wasn't it? The Buxton are the actual mid-table team, aren't they? They've basically got the old flip-flops on, haven't they?
They are, unfortunately. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but Craig Elliott, former Boston manager, of course, he announced he'd be leaving at the end of the season. That was probably still in March, so you can't even really suggest that Buxton are trying to impress the manager for next season. He's not going to be there. How much of the squad are going to be there? Who knows? There's talk of a change of training regime there. Certainly the spine of that side that travelled over from Boston left us because they couldn't commit to a full-time or a hybrid training model. So if Buxton are going the same way, I don't imagine many of those that pulled on a Navy shirt yesterday afternoon are going to be doing it again next season. So perfect for Farsley. You score early and then you get the news from Brackley, from Blyth, that Brackley are helping you out and they survive for another season at step two.
And Dickie at Rushall, they've survived a really good debut season for them in the National League North. And I know there's a few rumours floating about their ground. I mean, I don't know if you've heard anything on that.
About Rushall? I haven't, no. I mean, it is a it's a compact little ground, but you know, you would think to aspire to go higher. And I don't know if they, I would imagine the Allen family are realistic. I mean, it's John and Nick, father and son, who are essentially Mr. Rushall Olympic and his son have propelled the club to where they have. They'd have a lot of to do both on and off the field if they had aspirations to go higher. And I think this season it was principally about just retaining their place. And they knew that was going to be tough. But, you know, they don't have the budget of some of these clubs. They're in the shadow of lots of other clubs in that part of the world as well. So they don't pull in huge attendances. So it really is a notable achievement for Rushall to retain their place in National League North for another season. But no, I mean, if there is work to be done, the Allen family are the kind of people I would back to find a way to do it, because that's what they've done for the, you know, the duration of their time at the club.
I would say, to be fair to Rushall, we went there on Easter Monday, and Boston had visited in September in the FA Cup. I briefly bumped into you then, and the terrace at the far end as you enter Rushall, for anyone that's been, that had been taken down. They're obviously starting some works there, but to just be starting work on Easter Monday, if it's, you know, required for the end of April, like we saw with Peterborough Sports last season, and I know Warrington have been rushing to meet ground grading for next season. I don't know how far they've gotten with that now. I didn't think to look how it looked yesterday, to be honest. But they handled a fairly big crowd at Rushall that day. I wondered what the experience would be like on Easter Monday with Boston taking a few, and they did handle it really well. It was a good atmosphere. They're good people there, clearly. They just need to jump through the right hoops, don't they?
Yeah, and I suppose it's a conversation for another time. You know, we could get sidetracked onto this and talk for a long time about ground grading, because we're, you know, non-league nerds after all. But yeah, when you're in a position like Rushall and like Peterborough the season before, what do you do? Are you going to commit to spend that money if you don't know whether you're going to retain your place in that league for another season? You almost kind of have to leave it late, and then you're up against the clock. You're possibly asking for extensions. You've got other clubs asking why you've been given leeway that they weren't given, etc. It's a tricky one for the National League to have to sort of handle, I guess. And I can see both sides of it, so I'll just park that there for now, and we'll talk about some football.
Yeah, we'll talk about the playoffs, because it was again, that was sort of action to race into those eliminator positions. South Shields gave themselves a chance of getting in there. They beat Southport by 3-0. But ultimately, they just missed out. Aaron Martin, Paul Blackett from the penalty spot, and then Jordan Hunter with the goals there. Alfreton, they got a good 1-0 win away at Scarborough, thanks to Sean Brisley's penalty. And then your boys, Christian, 2-0. Boston away at Hereford, they won. Goals from Jordan Richards and Jai Rowe on the score sheet there. And one thing I wouldn't have on my bingo sheet when I was watching Jonathan Van Tam in 2020 was him going to Hereford dressed as a nun on the last day of the season.
Yeah, he's always been one to try and push his allegiances for the club where he can. I remember sitting in lockdown and suddenly there's a Boston United tie on the 6 o'clock news. So, no, JVT, as he seems to be shortened to in Boston, he's always popping up. I've never seen him in fancy dress before, but it was a party mood for United in the end. A close first half with Hereford. They had a big gate there. Until Boston won at Banbury on Tuesday night, Hereford still had a chance of making the playoffs. So they'd sold plenty of tickets. There was 4,000 there. Boston took a healthy contingent. And yeah, 2 goals after half-time. I listened to Joe Simpson, the coach, speak to the club's media yesterday evening, and he said that they hadn't expected Hereford to play with a back three. There were gaps opening up in the first half, and United came out after half-time. They didn't make any substitutions, but they shifted the whole setup of the team from a back four to a back three. And 2 goals in 20 minutes after the restart shows that something went right. And yeah, Boston, it was simple after last Saturday. They drew 0-0 at home to Scarborough. And we all sort of thought, oh, that's, you know, that's it now. It's out of our hands. But results elsewhere meant that 2 away wins this week at Banbury and then at Hereford would have done the trick. And the three lads that won Player of the Year awards have scored the goals. Jordan Richards, J. Rowe and Dylan Hill got the winner in the first half at Banbury on Tuesday night. And the result for Curzon, that I'm sure we'll come on to, means United don't finish seventh, but they actually take sixth.
Yeah, you were looking at going to Charlie, weren't you, who finished fourth, but Curzon could only get a nil and a draw away, already relegated Bishop Stortford. So they finished seventh and Boston a sixth. And now you go to Alverton, and that'll be a really interesting battle. Alverton they've been solid all season, haven't they?
Yeah, firstly, on the Chorley situation, after we'd won on Tuesday night, you do start to look and think, you kind of plot your course. It was looking like being Chorley away on a Wednesday, not the easiest journey for anyone that's working to make. But the Curzon situation was they only needed a point away at Bishop Stortford to make sure. And with South Shields that you mentioned and Spennymoor also winning quite comfortably at home to King's Lynn, at that point was crucial for Curzon. So I did start to wonder after Boston went 2-0 up, are Curzon going to push for a winner? Are they going to be happy with their 0-0 away at Bishop Stortford? And that's where it stayed. So shorter trips for both. For Boston, as much as I say the journey's more straightforward, I'm not sure the game will be. We lost 4-0 at Alfreton way back in September. Boston are a different prospect then, but you know what you're getting with them. They've got some good players. The last couple of years, they've added players like Jordan Thewlis that offer a little bit more. I don't think Alfreton are quite the lump it to the big man team that they maybe were 2 or 3 years ago. Both sides won the home games when they met in the regular season, and Billy Heath's got one over on Boston before with North Ferriby in the playoffs. So there's a bit of history to go at. Hopefully there'll be plenty at North Street, and perhaps a contrast in styles, but two teams that are in form.
Yeah, and in third, Dickie, oh, look who it is. It's Brackley again.
Yeah, I mean, they Brackley have, I think it was just, well, they did make the playoffs last season, didn't they? They
made it for about the last 10 years.
Yeah, I know. They're perennial bridesmaids. And, you know, yet another opportunity to go one better this time. It's Gavin Cowan was at the club last season, but he wasn't manager at the time. He was assisting Gareth Dean. They obviously went into the playoffs actually in quite poor form, form that had cost Roger Johnson his role as manager just a few weeks earlier. But Brackley did what Brackley do, and they made it through, weren't successful ultimately, losing in the final Kidderminster Harriers. But I don't think anybody was going to stop Kidderminster last season. But Brackley are going in really good form. I mean, you look at that, we've spoken about the 5-1 result at Blyth yesterday. That looks like a team that's tuning up, and a team that's ready, and a team that's hungry for it. You know, they've got the benefit of not playing in an eliminator game as well, so it gives players a chance to have a bit of a rest. They know.
Yeah, that's maybe been the downfall the last couple of years, hasn't it? That they've ended up finishing fourth or something, and they've had to play two games rather than one.
Yeah, you know. You just want as few hurdles in front of you as possible, really. And it'd be interesting to look back over this playoff format, actually, and see how many times that teams have had that week rest before they play their semi-final game rather than have to play eliminator, how often that's proven to be a boon for them. Obviously, that's why the playoff is set up the way it is, to reward the teams that finish second and third with the advantage of a home draw, and they get that bit of a break as well. So it, I suppose, in that sense, it might not prove an awful lot. But yeah, Brackley are looking quite good for it this year. But you have to say, you know, they changed management. Kevin Wilkin was moved aside from his role at Brackley, probably because of that not being able to take that final step. Gavin Cowan's got them there now, and I guess there will be a little bit of pressure on them in that, you know, they've made a change. They've had a good season. But is it going to end the same way? They're just going to have to hope that it doesn't.
It's interesting you say about a team's not playing in midweek, because I make it the last three now have been won by teams that have finished fifth or sixth. The first two were both won by the teams that finished second. It was Harrogate and Chorley. But then Altrincham, behind closed doors, they won through a home quarterfinal and then won at York and at Boston. And then York themselves were fifth 2 years ago, and of course Kidderminster last year won three away games to get there. So momentum's a funny thing. I think the difference this year is that actually the teams in second and third are coming into it in good form. I think the downfall of the file team that I saw lose to Boston 2 years ago, King's Lynn last year especially, with Tommy Widdrington leaving, they had nothing like the momentum that Brackley and Scunthorpe, to be fair, will carry this year. They've both come into it in good form because they've had to fight for those places. Whereas last year, King's Lynn and Chester they were coasting. It's not a criticism of the players. That's just the league position they're in. That there was nothing more than a bit of pride to play for. And then to suddenly boot yourself up again seems to have been the undoing of them last year. This year, I think it's a different beast.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned about Scunthorpe, because up until about a month ago, they were on a horrendous run. And I think some of their fans were even thinking that Charlie or Brackley had leapfrogged them into second. They are second. And in terms of certainly the last 5 to 10 games, the second and third in the form table, Scunthorpe. So they are going into it in good form. They won 2-1 away at Gloucester, albeit Gloucester already relegated, but they came from behind. And it'd be one of those, although there's been discontent amongst Scunthorpe fans this season, eventually things have picked up for them in terms of they've been taken over, haven't they? And if you've got to go to Glanford Park, the fans will be up for it, won't they? They'll realise what's at stake. They'll think, do you know what? This is our opportunity to get back up, because you feel if they don't, they might struggle again for a little bit, might they?
I think it's huge for Scunthorpe being at Glanford Park. In terms of the league itself, it's a proper setting for a potential playoff final and for a semi-final. And that's no disrespect to teams that have hosted in recent years, but I know Kidderminster had trouble with Brackley last year. They didn't get the allocation they wanted. Good luck to anyone that fills the away end at Scunthorpe. I'm not sure any of the other teams would be capable of doing that. And I would include Boston in that. So you're going to be taking as many fans as you like to Scunthorpe if they do get through their semi-final into the final. They've only lost 3 times at home this season. I'm pretty sure one of them was to Curzon Ashton, so there's maybe something to hang your hat on there. But no, they've been the second best team in the league all year. You don't always land where you sort of feel you should, but they've done enough. They've won their last 4. They finished 3 points clear of Brackley, and it's home comforts for them if they can cash in.
Yeah, I think one of the possible benefits that Scunthorpe have got is they've had a few weeks to get used to the idea that they were going to finish second rather than still chasing Tamworth for top spot. So you've had that opportunity to sort of like reset your goals a little bit, rather than, you know, if you're chasing for the title till almost the last day of the season, then you fall short. All of a sudden, you've got to refocus for a playoff campaign at short notice. They haven't got that problem this year, in that it's been apparent for a few weeks that Tamworth were going to win the title. So perhaps that's partly what's behind Scunthorpe's sort of like rejuvenation in form. 4 wins on the bounce going into the playoffs does make it look as if they've, you know, they've got their heads together.
And also Curzon Ashton, Dickie, I mean, what a season for them. First time they ever made it as well into the National League North playoffs.
Yeah, at last I can say that it wasn't exactly a prediction, but my feeling that the next step for Curzon Ashton as a club would be to make the playoffs, has finally happened. It's been a slow build for them, but Curzon Ashton are nobody's fools. They're not a club that anybody at National League North level takes lightly anymore. I know they will still get derided a little bit for, you know, small crowds, etc. Seriously, the number of people that they've got watching them doesn't have any bearing on how they play on the field, and they are a competitive outfit. And I think it's terrific for them that they've got there. Of course, they had the disruption of losing Adam Lakeland mid-season as well, when he went to King's Lynn, and Craig Marne's taken over, and that's been a very smooth transition as well. The players have continued to play well for him. And yeah, I'm interested to see how they go. But I do think, as a football club, we should finally be putting some respect next to onto Curzon Ashton's name here, because they've deserved it.
They've only lost 4 on the road this season, fewest defeats away. I think it suits them going and being underdogs. It's the spirit of the club, like you say. They are put down quite loudly, but they've been at this level a long time now. I believe it's 2015 they came up. They've steadily built, and yet they've shown it this season. They're a difficult team to beat, even when you're hosting them. We'll see where they end up. They'll maybe feel an even smaller fish in a bigger pond come July.
Yeah, there'll be no pressure on them at all going into those playoffs, will they? So that'll be interesting to see how that goes. The champions Tamworth, they wrapped up their season with a 3-0 win away at already relegated Banbury. Chester and Darlington drew 0-0. Just a quick word on Darlington, by the way, Christian. What a job Steve Watson did there. And I know even when he went in, the fans on the forum were saying, well, we're dead and buried. We want him here next year to like plan for life in step 3 and get us back up. And in the end, he comfortably stayed up.
They've been in title-winning form last 15 games of the season, 31 points. If you could have replicated that over the year, they'd be talking about stepping up a division and or certainly troubling Tamworth. And they've, as much as we said earlier, that Blythe have kind of very slowly fallen away and they've landed in their worst position of the season. Darlington have managed exactly the opposite. The Heady Heights of 16th haven't been seen at Blackwell Meadows this season. That's where they finish. A draw at Chester is always a good point, regardless of what Chester were or weren't fighting for. I saw that they took a healthy and a vocal travelling contingent all the way across from northeast to west. So, yeah, it's been a positive end to the season for them. I'm sure they'd have been disappointed if you told them 16th before a football was kicked. But clearly, when Steve Watson took over, they'd have snapped your hand off to be in Farsley's position yesterday, let alone 3 points and four or five places better off. And it's potentially momentum to build on for next season. You know, we see at all levels of football teams that can really kick on that last 2 or 3 months and feel like they've achieved something. It can be a good platform to build from. So I'm sure there's lessons to be learned about where things went wrong in the first 2/3 of the season, but Darlington are safe. That's obviously all they're aiming for when Steve Watson came in.
Yeah, Charlie going to the playoffs with a win. They won 3-1 away at Peterborough Sports. And Spennymoor, they finished the season strongly as well. A 3-0 win at home to King's Lynn. And after all the sort of upheaval they've had there, they only finished a point outside the playoffs. They were level on points with South Shields in the end. So Spennymoor, another side, after having brought in Graham Lee, they will be looking to push on next season as well, won't they?
I see Shields and Spennymoor. You can maybe sum up their seasons with one kind of summary, if you like. They both fell away over Christmas, Spennymoor quite drastically. I mean, they seemed to be in free fall. They were maybe looking to do what Blythe have ended up doing. They were 9 in a row. They've come all the way back into the picture, but both Shields and Spennymoor in the last week or so, one lost at Curzon, one lost at Alfreton, and that's the result that's cost them in the end. As much as they've picked up plenty of wins along the way, it was that crucial game in April away at a potential playoff rival. And unfortunately for them, they weren't able to do the business. 74 points is incredibly high a tally to miss out on the playoffs, but that's the position that they're in this season. Both have had a very strong spring, aside from the disappointments a couple of weeks ago. And again, we said about Darlington potentially being able to push on from this next season. They can maybe take how it feels, like Chorley did last year, missing out on the last day, and go that step higher next year.
Absolutely. Well, that is it. Many thanks to Aaron McLean and also to Rob and to Joe and Danny Scopes. And a thanks as well to yourself, Christian, and Dickie for joining us in this section.
Not a problem. Good to speak to you both.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I'm hoping to rejoin you as a proper member of the North podcast next season. But yeah, we'll see. Playoff spending.
That is it. Thank you very much for listening in. Give us a follow on social media. We are on at NL Fulltime on X, formerly known as Twitter. And we're also on Instagram. And if you want to email us, you can. We're at nlfulltime@gmail.com. Until then, well, I'll play the theme tune.